Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, April 11th, 2014. UNICEF warns that 50,000 South Sudanese children will likely die from malnutrition this year.
Diarrheal diseases are likely to increase. That makes children even more vulnerable to malnutrition because they're not absorbing what they are able to eat.
And a peace concert for South Sudan is held in Nairobi, a concert that included Emmanuel Jal.
The peace concert is more about conscious awakening. It's about reaching to the heart of the people. And when you create awareness, it's like you're putting a spotlight in a dark place, you know.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. United Nations Children's Fund officials are warning that 50,000 children under the age of five could die this year in South Sudan unless food deliveries are increased and medical services improve. They say as many as 750,000 children could suffer from acute malnutrition. Megumi Davis-Rakawinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
UNICEF spokesperson Dawn Potter says the children most at risk are among the more than 800,000 people who have been internally displaced. He says many have already had to resort to eating wild roots and berries. She says the onset of the rainy season will only make the situation worse.
Diarrheal diseases are likely to increase. That makes children even more vulnerable to malnutrition because they're not absorbing what they are able to eat.
The UN has reached more than 500,000 people with emergency food assistance. But officials estimate as many as 3.7 million people are in need of aid. Potter says the ongoing fighting and poor roads make it difficult to reach some of the people in need, but the biggest problem is money. The UN says it needs a minimum of $232 million to prevent a sharp deterioration of the humanitarian situation over the next 3 months. Potter says the situation is made worse because there are few places for children suffering from severe acute malnutrition to get treatment.
Healthcare services have been enormously disrupted by the conflict. So many families, many children have little or, in many cases, no access to healthcare services. For example, last year there were 336 locations with outpatient treatment centers for malnutrition around the country last year. And this has been reduced to 228 this year. But bearing in mind that those, although maybe two-thirds still exist, they are, most of them, very much diminished in their capacity to deliver services.
Severe acute malnutrition is marked by abnormally low weight and severe wasting. Potter says UNICEF and its partners are sending small teams to some of the country's more remote areas to try to preposition food and provide treatment for malnutrition. They have already reached 6 counties in the country's northeast and have 3 more areas they are targeting this month. But she says it is highly unlikely they will reach everyone in need. Dr. Rur Riek, the International Health Coordinator at the National Ministry of Health, says the government is aware of the problem. Not surprisingly, he says the government is dependent on the international community for assistance.
Some of the health facilities are being either destroyed or some of them been looted. The human resources run away from those health facilities. So it's become a big challenge.
Riek says the obvious solution is for both sides to immediately stop fighting. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis-Rakarinj in Juba.
Meanwhile, the outgoing head of the International Committee of the Red Cross in South Sudan, Melker Mabek, says ongoing fighting in the country and the start of the rainy season has led to a sharp increase in humanitarian needs. Mabek tells Charlton Doki that aid agencies will need to do more to help the hundreds of thousands of people impacted by the fighting to survive.
Can you describe the humanitarian situation in South Sudan 4 months into the fighting?
Extremely difficult. The fighting that we have seen in the last couple of months have generated immense humanitarian suffering. Of course, unknown numbers have been killed and wounded. Hundreds and thousands of people have been displaced. They've been forced to flee their homes. without being able to bring much with them and are now displaced in the bush with the rains coming. So, of course, the situation is extremely precarious. And for the ICRC, it's now very, very important that we scale up our activities and that we are able to respond to these needs, particularly with the rains coming. The needs will only continue to grow, and so will our activities have to do.
You mentioned the rains there. How is the onset of the rainy season bound to affect your activities, especially in the field of health?
Yes, it's something that everybody knows well in South Sudan, especially us in the humanitarian community, the difficulties that come with the onset of the rains, particularly in being able to access places via road, of course. And the only way to respond to it is to increase the air capacity to be able to move both people and to deliver goods. And this is what we're doing. We are bringing in additional aircraft to South Sudan in order to be able to continue working during the rainy season. But even with that, we will not be able to reach everyone because some people are simply in too remote an areas, even for aircraft to be able to reach them.
Treating wounded people is one of your core activities. How many people would you say you have operated on since the start of the conflict, and what type of injuries did people have?
It's right as you say. Certainly one of the most fundamental activities that we carry out. We currently have four mobile surgical teams in the country, and these are surgical teams that we can deploy almost anywhere around the country where we can land a plane or get a car or bring a boat. And just in the recent 3 or 4 months, they have been active in both Juba, Bentiu, Malakal and Bor, as well as a large number of smaller villages and areas in the places that have been affected by the fighting. So far, our teams have treated over 1,200 surgical cases. Because we deploy these teams mainly in areas that have been affected by a conflict, most of the patients treated are gunshot wounds. We've also provided a lot of medical equipment, first aid material to hospitals and first aid facilities around the country.
I understand you've visited people detained since the start of the conflict. What concerns do you have about the conditions under which people are being detained?
This is also an activity that the ICRC carries out worldwide, visiting detainees. And the purpose of these visits is strictly humanitarian. We're only interested in the conditions of detention and the treatment of the detainees, that they have access to food, health care, and that they can contact their families. And only in the last 4 months now, we have visited over 1,800 detainees, in both civilian prisons and military places of detention. Now, the conditions of their detention, this is a matter that forms a part of the confidential dialogue that we have with the detaining authorities, and it's not something that we share publicly.
Given the tough humanitarian situation that you described earlier, what message do you have for the parties to the conflict?
Well, they must make measures to respect the fundamentals of international humanitarian law. Civilians must be protected and must not be deliberately attacked. Medical staff, medical facilities must be protected and must not be attacked either. And people that need medical care must be allowed to access that. Those are our two main messages for all parties involved in the conflict.
That was Melker Mbeke, the outgoing head of the International Committee of the Red Cross, speaking to Charlton Doki in Juba earlier today. South Sudan has one of the largest ICRC operations in the world. The ICRC spent about $72 million U.S. dollars in South Sudan in the last year alone. Two dozen people protested in New York yesterday outside the building that houses the South Sudanese mission to the United Nations. The demonstrators say they are seeking to draw attention to the plight of South Sudan, which of course erupted into political violence last December. Here's Joe Madison, a well-known political commentator here in the U.S. and talk show host who was one of the protesters.
Now is the time for the United States, the United Nations, and yes, the world to step up. I know we're focused on the Ukraine, But right now, there are more people dying in South Sudan than in the Ukraine.
Several protesters were arrested but later released. The violence has left more than 10,000 people dead and hundreds of thousands displaced, according to human rights organizations. The U.S. Secretary of State noted his grave concern with respect to the situation in South Sudan and reaffirmed his support for the people of the country and what he called readiness to stand with those who take bold steps to lead the country out of the crisis. In his meeting yesterday with the minister from the office of the president of South Sudan, he raised the need for the government of South Sudan to immediately stop the fighting, provide full humanitarian access, and cease harassment and threats against the U.N. mission in South Sudan. The secretary emphasized the importance of full cooperation with the African Union Commission of Inquiry and the U.S. government's support for justice and reconciliation. The two leaders were said to have a frank discussion of the way forward to heal the wounds of the violent conflict that broke out on December 15th, according to a statement released by the U.S. State Department. Before he met with the minister from the office of the South Sudan president, John Kerry at the State Department told RIAC that he took part in a panel discussion at Washington think tank about the crisis in South Sudan. Karen Zeitvogel, who joined us yesterday in the studio to discuss what RIAC said at the panel discussion, has this report.
RIAC told the audience at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS, that President Kiir is drawing up a roadmap for restoring peace in the country. He says a cornerstone of the president's plan is a dialogue that will include all South Sudanese.
We need to have a national political dialogue. This will allow those who were fearing to come out from the camps if the agreement is respected of cessation of hostilities, and they can also be participants in that conference.
In a somewhat rambling speech, RIAC expressed regret and some contrition as he spoke about the crisis in South Sudan. He said the outbreak of fighting on December 15th took the government by surprise.
We never expected that we will use a language of guns among ourselves again. And we have that aspiration of becoming also like a country that respects the norms of democracy.
RIAC never directly addressed the possibility of the United States imposing sanctions on anyone who is found to have blocked the peace process or incited violence in South Sudan. But he did say that what South Sudan needs now is help, not punishment.
If there is anything we need most, is the support, not just punishing us.
Zach Verton is a senior advisor to the U.S. Special Envoy to South Sudan and Sudan.
Are particularly ready to stand firmly behind those who want to talk solutions, who want to chart a peaceful way forward, and who want to help the people of South Sudan realize benefits and fruits of their hard-fought independence.
John Temin of the U.S. Institute of Peace was direct with his condemnation of the slow-moving peace talks in the Ethiopian capital. He noted that even as the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan grows, negotiations between the government and opposition groups have been put on hold until the end of the month.
We have heard in these past few days discussion of a possible famine in South Sudan. We are hearing about 3.7 million people potentially at risk for starvation. At the same time, we are in the midst of a three-week break in negotiations in Addis on these issues.
Temin said claims from some officials in South Sudan that there's less fighting around the country, that the capital is calm, and that normal life is resuming were utterly false.
70,000 people living in UN camps is far from normal. I think that people from certain groups not feeling safe to walk the streets of the capital city, and that is the case still, is not normal. I think that having a large contingent of a neighboring country's army on your land is not normal. And I think that having over 1 million people now displaced because of the violence is far from normal.
A longtime follower of events in South Sudan and Sudan, Temin says he worries that
the logic of negotiations in Sudan and now South Sudan that we've seen for decades is prevailing here. And that logic is that you fight on the battlefield to try to gain advantage, and then that advantage translates to the negotiating table.
He did offer words of support for the government of South Sudan as it draws up a roadmap to lead the country back to peace through a national dialogue. But, he wondered,
who is going to lead that? I would suggest that the government is not the right entity to lead that.
There was a sense that the CSIS discussion was just another exercise in talking rather than doing something about South Sudan's crisis. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Eating well is very important for your health. Medical experts say it's best to center your diet, whenever possible, around fresh fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts, and grains like maize and wheat. These foods do not contain the fats and fatty acids that can cause diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. It's also good to include some fresh meat, chicken, and fish in your diet. Researchers say about 35% of all cancers are related to what people eat, and a high diet in fruits and vegetables can cut the risk of cancer in half.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the treason trial continues in Juba. Stay tuned.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think it's acceptable to marry someone from a different group?
Everyone has his style of loving. Love, it's a gift from God. You know, everyone has to expose it to everyone he or she wants.
Marriage has no boundary. But other than that, if you people live in harmony, you can marry anybody. You know, the saying that love is blind.
That one is a choice of someone who is going to be to merit. But it is not been forbidden. It is according to you and that girl.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. I'm Gwen Uten, and it's time for your comments. As you might imagine, most of you are still very concerned about the ongoing conflict. Mario Gabriel Akun in Kwajuk Wadup State writes, Dr. Riek Machar should understand that the route to leadership is not through the barrel of the gun. He says, peaceful dialogue and national reconciliation is the only tool that will reunite us, the youth of South Sudan, who are torn apart by self-seeking leaders struggling for power. Okon adds, we are tired of war and death. We need peace and education. Deng Gwet Ayat in Gogreal Warup State says, I am calling on IGAD mediators to ensure the peace talks move faster in order to end the crisis in South Sudan. Hoth in Juba writes, I welcome the U.S. government's decision to impose sanctions on the government and individuals who interfere with efforts to end the conflict. He goes on, these sanctions should start with Presidents Yoweri Museveni and Salva Kiir Mayardit. Maimer Akon Bol in Gogrial writes, the two warring political factions involved in the ongoing conflict should commit themselves to peaceful negotiations and initiate an inclusive dialogue agenda and show willingness to compromise with each other to end the fighting. Michael Mawich Kwang in Juba simply states, we need peace, not war, in South Sudan. And finally, Peter Simon Baringba from Yambio, Western Equatoria State, says, I strongly criticize cattle keepers because they have been responsible for triggering violence with other communities. Baringba continues, cattle should be kept in a separate place to ensure they do not destroy people's crops.
We welcome all of your comments. You can reach us by text or online at South Sudan in Focus at voanews.com. I'm Gwen Uten.
We read listener comments on Fridays. These comments come from you, our listeners, and they reflect the views of the commentator only. The comments do not represent the views of anyone on this program or The Voice of America. The defense team resumed its case in the hearing of four former senior politicians accused of organizing a coup to overthrow the government. Former ruling party Secretary General Pagano Moom took the stand today and says he had nothing to do with the fighting that broke out in December. Philip Alou attended the hearing in Juba and has this report for VOA.
A Moom's testimony lasted 4 hours. He says he did not even know that fighting had broken out on December 15th and was surprised to be picked up from his home 2 days later by security officials. He says the main evidence against him is that he participated in a news conference with former Vice President Riek Machar in early December, where speakers criticized President Salva Kiir's handling of the ruling Sudan People Liberation Movement Party. Amom says the only time he opened his mouth at the event was to sing the national anthem. Defense lawyer Kur Lal Kur says he expects the five judges overseeing the hearing to recognize that his client has nothing to do with an alleged coup.
He spoke a lot about charges brought against them that are untrue. He says he has not done anything wrong. These charges are not true, and any accusations must be in accordance with the law. There is freedom of expression in our legal documents.
Former National Security Minister Uye Dengajak defended himself on Tuesday and also denied all the charges while on the witness stand. Kur says the prosecution will be able to cross-examine both of the political figures when the hearing resumes next week on Tuesday. The prosecution team says it will not comment until after they have had the chance to question the four accused, including former liaison officer for the South Sudan mission in Washington, Ezekiel Lulgarquoth, and former deputy defense minister, Majang Deagod Atem. For VOA News, I'm Philip Alew in Juba.
The International Organization for Migration says there has been a tenfold increase compared to a year ago in the number of migrants intercepted off the coast of Italy. As VOA's Pam Dawkins explains, most of the migrants are trying to escape unrest in Africa and the Middle East.
The International Organization for Migration says as of early April, almost 15,000 migrants had arrived near the Italian coast this year. That compares to about 1,500 for the same period last year, according to the group's Italy spokesman, Flavio Di Giacomo.
These are people who are fleeing from wars or regime. The main nationalities are Syrians, Eritreans, Somalis, people coming from Mali and sub-Saharan countries.
One of those would-be migrants is Jackson Evex, who is from Nigeria.
I left Nigeria because of the issue of Boko Haram.
Boko Haram is an Islamist militant group blamed for thousands of deaths since 2009. Evex was among 46 African migrants who set out from Libya in a rubber raft with hopes of reaching Europe.
I want to go to Europe to continue my education for freedom and everything.
The migrants were intercepted by Libyan naval forces. Di Giacomo says last year an estimated 700 would-be migrants died as they attempted to cross the Mediterranean.
It is time to prevent these tragedies from happening, and the international community should develop a more comprehensive approach to protect migrants.
Di Giacomo says the international community is focused too much on border control and not enough on the humanitarian issues that prompt people to flee from their homelands. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, Washington.
An Oxfam-organized concert promoting peace in South Sudan last evening in Nairobi was filled to capacity, despite concerns about some of the artists scheduled to perform. The event was designed to raise awareness in the region on what's happening in South Sudan. But some people criticized the inclusion of rap superstar Emmanuel Jal, who some say used social media to promote tensions between ethnic groups. As Lucy Pony reports for VOA from Nairobi, Jal apologized for his remarks but vehemently denies he incited violence and insists he showed up to prove he wants peace.
I'm a pushman, I'm a pushman, yeah. I'm a pushman, I'm a pushman, I'm a pushman, I'm a pushman.
JAL headlined the concert, which also included performances by South Sudanese artists Bior Gar and Nyarwach JAL, Kenyan Eric Wainaina, and Uganda's Daisy Hope Ejang. JAL, a former child soldier, became famous for his hip-hop songs calling for peace and reconciliation. He says the concert was his way of carrying that message forward.
The peace concert is more about conscious awakening. It's about reaching to the heart of the people. And when you create awareness, it's like you're putting a spotlight in a dark place, you know. Putting a spotlight in a dark place makes evil perform less.
But some people criticized JAL for messages he put out on social media, including Twitter, when fighting broke out in December. He accused President Salva Kiir and others of targeting specific ethnic groups. Critics say he helped promote tribal divisions within the country in the days after the fighting started. In one instance on Twitter, he wrote, quote, "If President Kiir has a nuclear bomb, he would use it to destroy Nuer." Kiir and Museveni are using cluster bombs in South Sudan against civilian. End of quote. JAL says he was simply telling people what was happening in the country.
For people who express their anger on me on Facebook or on Twitter, it's normal. Human beings have to react. Everybody's afraid. Everybody's losing their loved ones. There are people who are scared about losing their bread because in this conflict, they're benefiting a lot. So now, by exterminating other people from the system, they are benefiting. So they want to keep that.
Oxfam's regional media and communications advisor, Amy Brown, says she hopes the message of peace can overcome any controversy.
It's starting a conversation, or maybe even giving a wider platform for a conversation that is happening. I was recently in South Sudan and I met a lot of people in various locations as well, and the stories of Dinka helping Nua, Nua helping Dinka were actually the majority, not the minority.
Civil society activist Peter Lasuladu attended the concert because he believes the concert can help encourage peace in South Sudan.
The concert is very, very important to bring us together as South Sudanese, not on our ethnic basis, but we came together as South Sudanese just to have a word of peace, to encourage one another that whatever is happening home, we should come and make an end to it.
The concert was free to attend and tickets were given away through social media and radio promotions. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
We want peace and we're gonna get it. We want peace.
That's all we have for you this week. We leave you with the song We Want Peace by none other than Emmanuel Jaw.
Check it out. We want peace and we gonna get it. Throw your hands in the air. Let me see that you're with it. Corrupt governments causing wars and beef. And my only intent is to bring about peace. Sudan and Darfur gonna stand up proud. At the newborn mountains gonna shout it out loud. Freedom, freedom, song of the free one. Fighting for the people in the African.
The world was a little bit fatter. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman. Fear and they could genocide with Hitler so he can feel a warm.
At South Sudanese rap star Emmanuel Jaw with his song We Want Peace. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
on your helmet. Let's scream and shout, 'cause we want peace.